Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of two clinically studied ingredients in one revolutionary formula. Berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. And right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
The Craig Ferguson Fancy Rascal stand-up tour continues throughout 2024. For a full list of dates and tickets, go to thecraigfergusonshow.com/tour. See you out there. thecraigfergusonshow.com/tour. My name is Craig Ferguson. The name of this podcast is Joy. I talk to interesting people about what brings them happiness. Matt Williams has written or created or both some of the biggest sitcoms in American history, some of the most controversial sitcoms in American history, and now he's kind of looking for God. Matt Williams. I want to talk to you about your book in a little bit, because it is a book of, first of all, I haven't read it. Now, that's full disclosure. I've read the blurb for it, and now I will read it, because I do read, and I want you to understand that I will read it. And when I was doing late night, people used to say, well, you got to read the book before, you know, the celebrity is on the show. You are the celebrity at this point. And I'd say, no, I'm not going to read the book or watch the movie or see the TV show, because then we're both talking about something we already know about.
Oh.
See?
There you go.
And I had this conversation with Leno, who's like, no, that's totally wrong. You're so rude. That is so rude. I said, all right, well, I'll skim through the movie. But a book's a commitment. A book is a commitment. Yep. You've got to, I mean, that's a few days, yep. You know, and if I'm talking to authors every day, that's my whole life. My whole life is reading books, which is not a terrible life, I guess. When you... Because your book is a spiritual book.
It is a memoir told through humorous essays and what I call spiritual musings. There is a spiritual thread.
Yeah, it seems to me like the blurb I read that it is about something that look, you tell me what the book's
God
about.
God is very much a part of it.
Right, so God's a part. Are you a religious person?
I am.
Okay,
I am.
What stripe is
well,
your...
Well, my stripe early on was Lutheran. And
okay.
Very strict Lutheran.
Right.
And then that's one of the story threads is my evolution from God being a pissed off bearded guy sitting on a cloud.
Right. Yeah, the angry Santa on a cloud.
Angry
yes.
Santa, yeah. The you know, the petulant parent waiting to throw you into hell.
Yeah.
And then as I matured, I went, wait a minute, why do you want to spend time worshiping that God? And
right.
Then as I started exploring other religions and going, if God is love and there's a divine mind,
right,
a spirit, a holy mystery, whatever, the ultimate creator, I want to lean into that rather than the pissed off parent.
Right.
And so that's part of the journey, is that spiritual journey is tracked in the book, I hope with humor and humility.
Well, I would imagine so. I mean, given your writing credit so far, and we're getting to that, it seems like you are capable of writing the occasional humorous musing.
Yeah.
The occasional joke. Where did you end? Did you end up in a particular organized religion, or did you just wander out of Lutheranism into a kind of soft, rainbow-colored, informal?
I call it. I don't use the term Christian because right. that has all this baggage. As soon as you say Christian, Bible thumping, hairsprayed evangelist, calcified Christianity, my way or the highway,
yeah,
misogynistic, judgmental, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, none of that is Christianity.
I don't. So I say instead, I'm a follower of Christ.
Right.
So I am a Christian in that sense.
Right.
Because whether you can wrap your head around the historic Jesus being God incarnate or
right.
not,
right,
at least look at what the man was preaching and teaching.
Right.
Be kind, be compassionate, take care of the poor, feed, help others.
Yeah.
Who can argue with that?
Yeah. I think that my feeling, my personal feeling about Christianity, because I think I'm on a similar kind of search as you are. I'm looking for something that kind of makes sense in a God sense. And the, you know, I was raised in Presbyterian Scotland, which is not a million miles away from Lutheranism. It's kind of the same. It's like, it's got all that predestination, and you can try being good, but it's already been decided and all that kind of stuff, and you're kind of screwed, and let's not have any pictures up anyway. Like you suck and you're not even allowed to have art. It's like, what the fuck? But I became fascinated in recent times. I'm sure you have read C.S. Lewis and G.K. Chesterton and the Christian Apologists.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Through reading them, I was fascinated by, particularly C.S. Lewis, who seems to be able to put it into bite-sized chunks and kind of entertainment-style language that I can read and understand and digest pretty easily. I ended up at the Desert Fathers. Have you come across those guys?
You talking Thomas Merton, or you talk as...
No, I'm talking Origin of Alexandria, Evagrius of Pontus.
No, I've not.
I'm talking Meister Anthony,
Eckhart, St. Hildegard, Julian.
Hildegard's awesome. Yeah.
What really drove me back to Christianity was studying the Christian mystics, because
right.
they're dealing with panentheism. They're dealing with God living in all things, God right. being alive in all of us, as right. opposed to that floating figure out there, that right. Calvin mentality of, oh, I've got to beat myself up and crawl in broken glass for God to love me. And I thought, wait a minute, Hildegard, Meister Eckhart, they talk about the divine spark that lives in all of us.
Well, that was Origin of Alexandria as well. That was like second century Christian mystics.
Yes.
I'm fascinated by that, because I think a lot of that Lutheranism, though, look, if you're Lutheran and this is pissing you off, well, let's be honest, you were pissed off before we started anyway. But I think that all of that kind of punitive form of religion is a product of the very necessary Reformation.
Yes.
After, during the, because even the internal Reformation that the church had, Catholic Church had at the time, they were trying to find a way. But Origen of Alexandria was excommunicated 500 years after he died, because he said there can be no physical representation of God. That's insane. If God is everywhere, then how can you draw a picture of it? That's silly. And he was excommunicated 500 years after he died. Because I feel like if your business is selling art and pictures and bones and relics
and candles and
little gigos and chachkas, then it's going to be tricky if you say, well, there can be no physical representation of God. You can't have a drawing of the sapphire pavements of heaven. You're going to have to just go there in your head. And of course, he even went, like, you can't do it in your head either. It's not, that's not allowed. But some people are very strict. Are you very strict in what, do you feel you've arrived at a belief system, or are you still kind of searching?
Oh, I'm always evolving. I think that's the older you get, the more you read, the more you travel the world, you keep evolving. I think that's one of the problems with organized religion is it gets locked in, like I said, calcified.
Right.
It's this way. It must be this way. It's dualistic thinking. There's right and wrong. There's God and the devil and nothing else.
Ones and zeros.
I don't believe that. If God truly, and I do believe, God lives in all things.
Right.
And animates all life.
Yeah.
And right now is expanding the universe we're sitting inside.
Right.
Well, then I better start changing my concept of God. And I'm still evolving. I'm still trying to learn.
Right.
And I read as much as I can about other religions. And, you know, when you start to break them down, really break them down, they're kind of all saying the same thing.
Pretty much.
Which is don't be an asshole.
Yeah,
just be kind.
Yeah, don't be a dick.
And take care of people.
Yeah,
that's right. It's kind of that simple.
Be nice.
Be nice.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of interesting. But your period of your writing career in Hollywood, I mean, so you started on, the reason why I'm going to this is because it's not a period which is renowned or an area which is renowned for spirituality of any kind, really. I mean, there's a lot of yoga, but yoga's great, but you know, it's like, but yoga and juice aren't, that's not where it ends. So you were working, you started on, I guess, Be the Cosby Show, right?
Very first television show.
That was your first job as a writer?
As a writer.
Right.
Was the Cosby Show.
Which was in LA, would be
in New York.
In New York City. In the 80s, was it in the 80s?
Yeah, it was in the 80s, and it started in Brooklyn, Avenue M in Brooklyn.
Right.
At studios way out there, and then eventually moved to Astoria in Queens.
Right, in Queens.
So the Cosby Show, and then with two other writers, did the spinoff. I created the spinoff, Different World.
Right.
And then after 3.5 years on The Cosby Show, I left, created Roseanne.
Right.
Then made a deal at Disney and then created a couple of other shows and then eventually created Home Improvement with David and Carmen, my two partners.
Right. So you have worked on some of the most successful shows. Man, you must be so rich. That's the eye of the needle heaven thing. I'm just mentioning it
to you. I'm pretty blessed.
Well, those were the good times, man. That's when sitcoms made money.
Yes.
So you're working, you weren't like a head writer on Cosby, right? You were a staff writer?
Staff
you were in the
writer.
Writer's room?
Yeah.
So A Different World was your first, like you were running it?
No. We just did the pilot.
Okay.
A man named John Marcus and Carmen Finestra, who later became my partner at Wind Dancer.
Right.
The three of us took Bill's idea. I think Bill got the created by credit because it was his idea and we got to develop by credit or something. But we wrote the pilot, produced the pilot with Tom and Marcy. The show was launched. Then we went back to the Cosby Show and continued writing because we were, the staff was small, five, maybe six writers.
In a sitcom writer's room?
Yeah.
At that time, that's tiny.
Yeah. And so when you have three of them peel off to create a pilot, so then we came back to the show. And then while working on Cosby, Tom Warner and Marcy Carsey said, do you have any ideas you want to pursue? And then that...
Then you went into...
Roseanne.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've worked with, both Cosby and Roseanne for wildly different reasons. Their legacies are tarnished pretty badly. Cosby, very obviously. So are you still in touch?
No, I've not talked to Bill in... he actually shot a video when New York Stage and Film honored my wife and I many years ago. And he did a video and I talked to him then, but that was 15 years ago.
Probably. Yeah, it's funny that because people say, I never met Bill Cosby, but people saying, did you hear anything? And I was like, actually, no, but I wasn't in that world. I wasn't anywhere near it. Did you hear anything?
No.
There was no vibe about it or anything?
Well, you heard things about maybe women being around, but being a serial rapist, no concept. I was shocked.
Oh, you mean that he had a lot of women around, but you didn't know that he was abusing women?
Yeah, at all. And what was tough was he was kind of my mentor. I'd learned comedy. You hear the tapping?
Yeah, is that? That's Bill's outside.
That's Bill. It's somebody with a hammer above us. going, man. Shut the hell up.
Yo, maybe it's the Lutheran God. Oh, yeah?
Lutheran God.
Yeah, you're right. Oh, yeah.
I got the lightning bolt, guys.
So you weren't aware of any of that going
on? No,
you
know, of course not.
It's a professional environment, I guess. It's a strange thing. It's kind of very upsetting. So you moved from Cosby into Roseanne.
Right.
Now, Roseanne, that show was based on her stand-up, right? That's how you guys built around it. Was that, or was inspired by it or something?
It was a combination of two things. I went to Tom and Marcy and said, I want to do a show about three women who work in a factory in the Midwest,
right,
where I grew up.
Right.
Because a friend of my wife's has said, you know, we have a real support system. These women who work in the factory, this was in Detroit,
right,
all support each other and babysit each other's kids. And if one of them gets sick, they buy groceries. And I went, isn't that intriguing? And so the original concept was three women, one married with a husband and children, one divorced with a child, and one single,
right,
these three women. So, and they said, we like this idea. We'd love the idea of female-driven, you know, sitcom. And then they said, we have someone we think should play the married female on the show.
Right.
Look at her stand-up. Well, of course, it's Roseanne. She's got a very strong feminist point of view. So we started developing this, and that became the point of view of the show. And I will give her credit because she brought that whole feminist point of view.
She's got a very strong voice.
A very strong voice. But the real key to the success of that show was John Goodman.
Yeah.
Because when John, at his, quote, audition, it was more of a chemistry test. When he walked into the room with her.
Yeah.
And within seconds, he told her to move over. She told him to shut up. And they started, and Tom and Marcy turned to me and said, there's your show.
That's the show.
That's the core of your show.
They're both spectacularly gifted performers.
Yeah. And John Goodman is one of my favorite actors of all time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's amazing. And it's just gotten better and better as he went through a journey personally as well. Yeah. And
didn't we all?
Yeah.
The Craig Ferguson Fancy Rascal stand-up tour continues throughout the United States in 2024. For a full list of dates and tickets, go to thecraigfergusonshow.com/tour. See you out there.
You know how you can make your summer vacation better? Is with Cozy Earth's luxurious bedding and loungewear. It's like being at home, but also going away. It's great. And now you can get 35% off. You can get the unmatched softness. It's really as buttery smoothness of Cozy Earth's bedding. It's better than the finest hotels, and you get a really good night's sleep on your travels. And that's important. It's travel-friendly. It's hassle-free. Cozy Earth's bedding comes in adorable totes, making it the perfect companion for your adventures near and far. You can stay cool and comfy during long flights, and you know what that's like, with the Cozy Earth temperature-regulating bamboo joggers and pullover crew. Makes you look cool when you're traveling. I like it. Well, as cool as I can look when I'm traveling. So discover your next destination for ultimate comfort at Cozy Earth. Visit CozyEarth.com and use our code JOY at checkout and you'll get 35% off. And let them know we sent you after the checkout. Promo code JOY. J-O-Y. JOY. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Look, everybody has stuff that stresses them out and annoys them, and I'm no different from anybody else. For example, I get very irritated that people that wear shoes that look like feet. That's not a big deal, but it's a big deal to me. Obviously, there are much more important things to get worried about. Get them off your chest. When you keep them bottled up, it starts to affect you negatively. Now, therapy is a safe place to do that. That's what I did. And you figure out what's going on with you, work it through, and then let it go. Let it go, you see, that's what I think. I've done a lot of therapy, and I have to say I'm a very satisfied customer. If you think I'm kind of tense now, you should have seen me before I started. I really do recommend it. If you can do it, you should do it. If you're thinking of starting therapy, I'd suggest giving BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, it's designed to be convenient, it's flexible, and it's suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with, you know, a licensed therapist, a proper one, and then you can switch your therapist at any time for no additional charge. I just think it's a good idea. Give it a shot. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/joypod today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/joypod.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Did that ever get in your way? Did you ever hit the wall with booze and drugs and all that kind of stuff?
No, not booze and drugs. I think that, I know I was never addictive in that sense. I was very tough on myself.
Yeah.
Perfectionist. And part of what, and it's overcompensating for childhood crap.
Right.
And so I would really beat myself up for not being perfect.
Right.
Because going back to that angry God.
Yeah, yeah.
If you weren't perfect, you couldn't be loved.
Right.
And I address this in the book. In fact, one of the chapters is called Knee Slapper, where at my earliest memory was making my mother laugh, doing impersonations and pratfalls, because I equated her laughter with love.
Love and approval. Well, that's why you work in comedy.
And I go, of course. Yeah, it doesn't take a boatload of psychiatrists to figure out why you end up being a comedy writer.
How did it manifest itself in the perfectionism, though? How was it negative in your life?
There's never any satisfaction or joy.
Right.
Because it's never good enough.
Right.
Even if it's number one, having two number one shows almost back to back.
Yeah.
And going, it's not enough. There's got to be more. And I've said this in other interviews, that anytime I created something and it was inspired by love and guided by spirit, it succeeded big time.
Right.
Anytime it was inspired by competition and driven by ego, it usually crashed and burned.
Right.
Because you're out here in Hollywood, the hamster wheel of Hollywood, you start running faster and faster and you look over your shoulder and go, well, he's got 2 top 10 shows. I should have a 3rd top 10. I need a 4th top. That movie opened big. Then my movie's going to open bigger. And you go, put on the brakes. Wow, you've lost perspective here.
Well, you see that in the billionaire race and all, you know, these ridiculous billionaires with the super yachts and the, oh my God. And I think what's kind of strange about it, and what I feel very grateful for, was I feel exactly the same. And I think probably my motivations are extremely similar to you. But what happened to me is when I got to do late night, and every night, I was meeting some of the most successful people in show business. And they're coming through, and I realized that the mensch to douchebag ratio is exactly the same as it is in the average bar in the average city anywhere in the world.
Yes.
Some people are nice, some people are douchebags, and most people are kind of, you know, travel between both, trying to stay on the mensch as much as possible. And what I was intrigued by was that more success oftentimes looked to me anyway to bring more personal unhappiness.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's almost a parable in that, I think. Like that, you know, as success, because I've always felt like as someone who's sober, I've been sober for 32 years. In the 32 years I've been sober, of course there are times when you think, when it gets dangerous and you might get drunk. The times when it's been dangerous in my sobriety have not been times of adversity. There have been times of, you know, I'm doing pretty good. You know what I mean? I maybe deserve a little respect around here. And that's when I lose a sense of perspective. Now, you were and are extremely successful writer. So at what point in the perfectionism did it break for you? Was there a moment, was there like a bottoming out or a topping out moment where you go, there's never going to be any good in this?
I think what happened was I kept pushing, and you know, every career is like a wave. It has its peak and then And I hit that, but I stayed in the business longer than I should have. I kept pushing. Mm-hmm. And I touch on this in the book, is when you stop creating from passion and you start generating product.
Right. Then they even call it product.
Fuck, and you got to be careful.
I know.
And then I was at a pitch meeting at a studio after having created some very successful shows. Yeah. And I was pitching a 10-episode arc for a new series. And in that, I said the lead actor and the female love interest next door have their first kiss in episode 10.
Right.
And someone in the room stood up. This is not a creative.
Right.
It's not the president of the network. It was a salesman who sells shows into syndication.
Right.
And he jumped up and went, "No, no, no, they can't kiss." And I went, "Excuse me?" He goes, "They can't kiss." And then he started quoting data. New girl, when this character kissed this character, they dropped exponentially in this key demographic and started. And when that happened, my brain exploded and splattered all over the wall. And I went, "What the fuck am I doing?"
Yeah.
I literally got in the car,
yeah,
drove back to the Wind Dancer offices,
yeah,
and told my partner at Wind Dancer, I told David, I said, "I'm closing up shop. I'm done." I said, because now it's not the tail of the dog. The flea on the tail is wagging the dog.
Sure. Totally. But what's interesting is because obviously there are young, creative, artistic people coming up.
Oh, of course.
But they're not here. They're not coming up here. They're coming up through the internet. They're coming up their own way. They're finding ways through because they will.
Right.
But you're right. The idea, particularly after COVID, when people pitch shows now, they do it on Zoom calls.
Yeah.
Like, how the fuck are you going to know if the energy is a thing is going to work on a fucking Zoom call? And so people say, there's 500 channels and nothing to watch. I tell you why there's nothing to watch, because the people in charge of it hate you and don't fucking care. All they want is your money. They don't give a shit about if the show is good or not. They don't fucking care. Nobody fucking cares. That's not our brand. It's like, your brand? What the fuck are you talking about, your brand? You know, but that's why one of the reasons I left, I thought, well, wow, I'm better. I'm fine with I think a certain amount of bitterness in show business is good. It means you're participating. But I think if you go too far, then it clouds.
I didn't want to become cynical. I honestly, I closed up shop. I moved back to our farm in New York. And I told my wife, I literally turned to her one day and I said, "I don't want to die with all these stories still living inside me."
Ah. So now you start writing and find another way to write.
All these stories that were stirring around, and almost as a cathartic exercise, I started writing what had been bubbling in my unconscious and deep in my heart, and it just started kind of pouring out. And then I felt liberated because I didn't have network meetings. I didn't have studio meetings.
Yeah.
I wasn't being noted to death by 20 executives.
Yeah.
And so these essays, these humorous essays and these musings started pouring out. And I went, my gosh, this is the best I have felt in years, because I'm back to creating as opposed to grinding out product. I'm creating something from my heart. And it really felt good. And it evolved into the book.
Well, I think I think it's healthy, isn't it? I mean, it's a natural progress of an artist as perhaps you enter a different age period in your life. I mean, it's got a funny thing. I was talking to, Jay Leno?
Only in passing.
All right. Leno and I are friends, and he's a terrific guy. And we were talking about a comedian we both know. You probably know this guy. But I don't want to mention him because we were just talking a little bit about his act and how it was so much better now than it had been at the peak of his success, that he was actually much better now. And Jay said this lovely thing about him, because all Jay cares about is the comedy, like, and the cars, obviously, but and Mavis, and that's it. That's the three things he cares about. Everyone else, he doesn't really care. And he said, "Yeah, what's really interesting about him is he's grown into an act. His act before was kind of, but now he's older. It's like, oh, he's a really interesting guy. I really enjoy his comedy now." And I think that that's true of many artists. And what because Hollywood deifies the young, artists who are good when they're young are not necessarily always going to be good, you know?
True.
And, you know, anything of any value I've done was well after 40.
Yes.
Before that. Like, oh, God.
Well, I think what happens is you get simpler. You know, the title of this podcast is Joy.
Hmm.
And you really start appreciating simple joy. Hmm. That it's not accolades. No. It's not approbation or approval. No. It's not the red carpet. Simple.
That's awful. Red carpet is awful.
And that's what people see on their screens and aspire to be a part of that. And you go, the greatest joy is usually pretty simple. Having breakfast with your kids or, you know, cuddling with your wife. It can be so simple.
It's health, I think. It's mental health and physical health and I hate to say it, but spiritual health as well, probably.
I was just going to say that goes back to the spiritual aspect. Yeah. When you're looking for your validation as a human being out there.
Right.
You can't win enough awards to ever feel satisfied and love yourself. No. As soon as
it's good to get awards, though, isn't it?
Oh, well, it's nice. It's like very nice. Yeah, yeah. But
or I would like it, I should probably say.
Yeah, I would too. I haven't won any. I haven't won.
So a lot of green dead presidents. I think you're fine. Yeah.
Okay. I'll buy some awards.
Buy your own. Yeah. Buy the Emmys. You'll be fine. But you're right. It's an inside job, but I think in order for the business to survive, certain areas of show business to survive, it has to be presented as an outsider. It has to be aspirational, particularly in the current wave of, you know, selling lifestyle as an entertainment.
Right.
You know, so like, I hate to single out the Kardashians. They're not bad people. But they created a genre which is, it's kind of empty. You know, it's like, you can be like me. Well, you actually can't. And anyway, do you want to be? I mean, it's like, I don't get it. It's like, you're watching Roseanne. Nobody watched Roseanne and said, I really want to be like Roseanne. You watch Roseanne and you go, fuck, we really like the Conners, aren't we? You know, I mean, that's what happens. It's a completely different approach to it. Where are you with Roseanne now?
I don't know.
No contact?
No contact.
All right.
I wish her well. I don't have any idea where she is.
Did you guys have I'm not talking about her specifically, but that show, was that, because that was hugely successful.
Yeah, it
show.
Was. It was.
Did that make life difficult on a day to day basis?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But it ended with me leaving the show and making a deal at Disney and creating Home Improvement. So it worked out pretty well.
Yeah, he's a pretty easy guy to be around, isn't
yes.
he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Any run ins I've had with him, he's like, hey, how you doing, buddy? And how you doing? It was like easy.
Tim is a gentleman.
He is, right?
I love Tim.
Yeah. Yeah. I always kind of impressed with him as well. He sticks to his guns.
Yeah.
You know,
and he's been sober for how many years and functioning and enjoying life.
Yeah. And he's one of those guys that I think is by his own admission, he's sober and he's been sober for a long time. And I look at him and I go, yeah, you're not faking this. You really were. you were pretty bad back then. Now, weren't you? Well, there's evidence of it. We got the mugshots. But he's a guy that turned his life around.
And even when he was living that pretty bad period, he was still a good guy. His
heart, he's
a good man.
And I've seen a lot of that.
Yeah.
I mean, over the time I've been sober, you see guys that their behavior would tell the world one thing.
Right.
You know, like fighting and disappointing people and stuff like that. And, you know, maybe making bad choices about business decisions, which I think was Tim's problem, getting into the wrong business perhaps. But then the way that you see people turn that around, I think it's something to do with, I can't live with being like that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, but if you talk about perfectionism, which was, I think, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it kind of says, like, when I said it wasn't drugs and alcohol, you said no, but it was perfectionism. So it's kind of your, I always thought perfectionism, I heard a guy talking about this, it's fascinating, that he said perfectionism is narcissism in reverse.
Mm.
It's Narcissus looking in the water and despising everything he sees. It's as equally out to lunch as an idea. But perfectionism in society is still kind of, people will say, oh, I'm a perfectionist. Nobody will say, oh, I'm a narcissist, because no. You know, they wouldn't say that because there's a negative connotation. But people will say, well, you know, I guess I'm just a perfectionist. And you go, well, stop doing that. That's bad.
What you're talking about is really deep-seated trauma as a kid.
I think so, probably.
And coming from a tumultuous household and divorce and all kinds of craziness, which I write about in the book.
Was there alcohol problems? I always go to that because that's my thing.
One part of it's alcohol. Yeah. My mother.
Mother was an alcoholic?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Career in comedy beckons.
Yeah, definitely. And the family and the, again, as the oldest child, you feel responsible for your siblings and everyone.
Right.
And as the oldest child, you get caught in the middle. And I remember, Greg, I was a sophomore in high school when the family blew apart. Right. And I won't go into all the details, but it was as ugly as it gets.
Right.
I consciously sat down and said, I am going to be so perfect, I will be beyond reproach. And I went from being a BC student to a straight A student, captain of the football team, king of the prom, leading all the plays. My high school yearbook is pages of accolades and awards.
Right.
And I consciously said, I will be so successful.
Right.
I will be beyond reproach. Now, 40 years later and 32 years of therapy, I kind of worked through that and go, that's bullshit. I don't need to do that anymore.
Right.
And then finally, somewhere in my late 50s, I went, I kind of like me. I'm okay.
But was that a result of being so successful? I mean, did that play into it?
No.
Sure?
No. Because as we started this conversation, that hamster wheel, I've only had 2 number one shows. I need 3 number one shows because how many does Chuck Lorre have? Okay, I need to, and you're going, wow, this is.
But the thing about Chuck's really a happy guy, though. Everything's fine. If he was here, he'd be like, no, I'm good. Everything's fine. But it is an interesting thing, though, that, you know, without the success, would you have reached the, you know, who was it that said this? Kipling, maybe? The road of excess leads to the palace of wisdom or something like that. I'm paraphrasing. It does, the road of success to you, like you get what you were looking for, you find it doesn't work, and then you start dealing with it. Because like, what I'm trying to get is, had you not been successful,
I would have been successful in other ways.
You're right.
I would have been a really good high school English teacher and a football coach.
Right.
And I would have been a winning coach because I'm a leader. I'm a natural born leader. I'm really good at inspiring people. And out here, if you're going to be a leader, whether you're a CEO or a room runner or a show runner, you lead either by inspiration or intimidation.
Yeah. Well, these days it's got to be inspiration.
And to me, it was always inspiration and setting an example. So I would have been successful. There's no question. If I had stayed in Evansville, Indiana, where I grew up, and become a bricklayer, I would have been a very successful bricklayer. Because I was driven and I held myself to that standard. And even when I was working as a hod carrier in my teen years for my uncle, I wanted to be the best hod carrier. You know,
can you lay bricks?
I can lay bricks.
See, that is actually a skill that I respect.
I can lay bricks
and home improvement stuff, joinery. Yep. Like now, these are skills that I value. So many people say, oh, I can play the Enormo Dome. I'm like, yeah, okay, that's fine. I know a lot of people that can do that. How are you with shelving? You know, I mean,
I'm not great with shelving, but bricks I can do. And I even tell my students, I go, you know, I'd learned how to make movies and TV shows on the construction site because it's not that different. You got a foreman, like you have a director, you have a blueprint, which is your script or the blueprint. You have a team, you have equipment. Everyone's got to be communicating. You have to know where to put the scaffolding. And then to take that even further as a writer, it's the same as bricklaying. You have to put one brick at a time, one word at a time, line them up into sentences, stack those sentences on top of each other until they become a paragraph.
Right.
And so the mentality behind the work. And so I get frustrated with artsy fartsy people who go, oh, I couldn't write today because a butterfly landed on my shoulder. And I go, bullshit. You show up every day.
You write.
And you write. Yeah. You've written 3-4 books.
Yeah.
You know, you show up, you write, you lay the bricks.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, you go, that wall didn't exist. That 3 pages didn't exist at 7 this morning. They do now. I can go kickback. Okay, I'll do it again tomorrow.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique two-in-one product combines the power of two clinically studied ingredients in one revolutionary formula: berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just two capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. Right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
I have was kind of friends of a friends with Maeve Binchy, the Irish, mm-hmm. right? And Maeve used to write 2,000 words a day. She'd get a she'd get a tub of sangria, a big jar of sangria, and she would write 2,000 words a day. And at 2,000 words, she stopped. Like, even if it was going great, no, that's fine. 2,000 words, finish the sangria, I have to do something else. Probably more sangria. But it is about, you know, inspiration, perspiration. It's that whole thing about,
it is.
It's about work. And you really have to do it. And it's quite interesting that, because I wonder, because so much work can be done for, you know, useful tools, AIs and, you know, like I remember when Final Draft came in as a writing program, people, I was not properly writing. If you're not writing on a typewriter, you go, isn't it though? I mean, I think it is. I tried, I don't know if you've ever tried this, I put into AI, write me 15 minutes of Craig Ferguson stand-up material.
Yeah,
it just wrote me some, like, it changed some gags that I had done, like changed the words. Now, like, that's not the choice I would have made.
Right.
And so, I mean, maybe it can do it at one point. I don't think so. But it's kind of interesting, though. I wonder if it could do first drafts. Like maybe an AI could do a first draft of a story for you.
My daughter was kicking around an idea for a story that was set in Patagonia.
Okay.
And she sent me the first chapter.
The outdoor store or the country?
The country.
Right. Okay. Got it.
Not the parka.
Right.
And she sent me the first chapter and she said, what do you think? And I said, this is really quite good. It's a little impersonal in right. spots. And she said, this was completely written by AI.
Wow.
She said, I gave them the machine, the facts, and right. said, write it in the voice of magical realism. And it came back in that. And I had no idea.
Wow.
But I did sense some coldness, emptiness in right. some of the parts. And I think that is that spiritual element, because the difference between craft and art, at least in my mind,
right.
craft can be duplicated by many people. Art is when you pour a piece of your spirit into something. If you see an original Van Gogh,
right.
you feel.
Oh, yeah.
It's like live.
Photograph of Van Gogh versus Van Gogh.
It's like alive.
Starry Night.
It has vibrates.
It does. I went to see it in the Met recently, actually. And the Starry Night is on a tour in the Met. And I looked, it has its own light source. It's luminescent.
Yes.
It's crazy.
Yes.
And I've seen photographs of it. I know the image.
Yeah.
But when you see the thing,
go to Rome and go to, and see a Bernini sculpture. And you look at this and you go, there's light coming out of that marble.
It's weird,
and
right?
It's alive. It's vibrating.
Yeah.
And I believe that is the spirit of the artist being poured into the object.
I love that idea. I think it's, you know what I did notice when I went to Italy was like all these like amazing statues in Florence and Rome and, you know, in Assisi and stuff. But if you go out into the really podunk rural churches, the religious art is crap. I mean, it's just bad. I was like, is that Jesus or is that a bear climbing a fence? What is that? I was like, oh, this is our Lord on the crucifixion. I'm like, no, that's a bear climbing a fence. I don't see that at all. I kind of loved it even more.
Well, circle back to your saints or the excommunicated guy. See, you shouldn't be creating art.
Yeah,
now, there you
well,
go.
Yeah,
there you
no,
go.
There's a lot of religions. They don't like that.
Yeah.
They don't like, I think in Islam, they don't like imagery either. No imagery, don't be doing that. You can write things, you can have calligraphy, which is very nice, but no imagery.
Right.
I don't know, how do you feel about that? Well, you don't have rules about it, I guess, right?
You know, how can you, you know, when people refer to God as him, I go, wait a minute.
Well, that's absurd.
How can take something that is incomprehensible, unfathomable,
right,
the greatest mystery, and reduce it to human form? One of the essays I wrote that didn't make it into the book was called Mr. Potato Head.
Right.
Remember the old Mr. Potato Head?
Oh, I do. Yeah, yeah.
I said, okay, so if God is this ineffable, eternal, creative energy, what we do with each religion is we grab our little parts and we create a Mr. Potato Head so that image looks like us. And when you think about that, it is true, you know, that we change. If you go from indigenous people with the, you know, the sky dancer or the bison heads, Wonka Tonka, the great spirit, to is God white bearded on a cloud? Is God mocha colored with dark brown eyes? I've said this before. James McBride wrote a memoir called The Color of Water because his mother was Jewish. His father was African American. And when he was a small child, he asked his mother, said, what color is God? And she said, God is the color of water.
Oh, okay.
And I went, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's the title of his memoir.
That's pretty cool.
It's very cool.
Do you look at different religions? Are you fascinated by other belief systems?
Yeah, I'm not a scholar by any means, but I read, I study as much as my small brain can comprehend. I really do try and connect the dots between all religions.
I do that too. And I became fascinated for a while with Akhenaten. You know Akhenaten? Akhenaten was Tutankhamun's father in ancient Egypt, right?
Okay.
So for a couple of thousand years in ancient Egypt, there's like, you know, you got the guy with the dog head, he's this guy. And you got all the different gods, mm-hmm. there's the Sphinxy guy that's in charge of, like, I don't know, the lady that's part, you know, giraffe and all that, and all these different gods. So Akhenaten comes along. The first documented monotheist who says, no. There is, his name was Amenhotep III, I think. He was the pharaoh. And he said, no, all of these gods, that's not true. There's one god. His name is Aten, or its name is Aten, and it is the sun. Mm-hmm. And they worshipped the sun god. So all of this thousands of year old religious infrastructure that's set up in ancient Egypt, no, much longer than from the time of Christ to now, right? That's all been going on. Is now dismantled, so and they move the capital of the city 40 miles into the desert, and they worship Aten, the sun god. And that upset a lot of people, as you can imagine.
Sure.
And then when he died, Tutankhaten, who was his son, said, for safety reasons, says, you know what, let's go back to the old gods, and I'll go back to Tutankhamun instead of Tutankhaten, because I am the son of Amun-Ra, and they took it all back. But I was fascinated because it was the first time I've come across the idea that the image of God was not humanoid or anthropomorphic in any way. It was the sun. Now, he did that thing, Akhenaten, where the only way you could talk to him is through me, which is a common, you know, piece of grifting. Like, oh, no, you have to speak the special language. You got to talk to me. That'll be $40.
Well,
you
know? In recent years, I've been reading. There's a Rabbi David Cooper wrote a book called God is a Verb.
Okay.
And Buckminster Fuller and others believe God is a verb. And that opened up my mind. Rather than this anthropomorphic being, this noun, what if God is the creative energy that lives in all things? So, and I'm way in over my head here, but if only 5% of matter is what we see and can touch and feel, 5%, 25% is dark matter, right?
Right.
70% is dark energy, and no one knows what it is.
Right.
But it exists, and it is what is pushing the whole universe out and why we keep expanding as a universe.
See, I think this is an extrapolation of René Descartes. I think this okay. is Descartesian. So Descartesian, René Descartes, when he sets out, annoys everybody, obviously, when he does it, but says, I'm going to, rather than God be a revelation, like, you know, a burning bush or a angel coming from heaven or a sudden dream or stuff like that, I will prove the existence of God through reason, which upset the church a lot. But he was clever about it. But he said, how do I go about it? I thought it was fantastic. Look, maybe if I'm telling you something you already know, forget it.
No.
I'm just, the idea of what he said, I'm going to doubt everything. This is where I'm going to start. Complete doubt, right? So he said, I doubt, you know, the universe. I doubt God. I even doubt myself. There's only one thing I cannot doubt. And that's I can't doubt that I'm doubting. I am doubting. Yes, it is an absolute, you're locked in. You can't doubt if you're doubting. So if I'm doubting, I've got to be thinking. It's just, I have to be thinking if I'm doubting. And if I'm thinking, then I am. Cognito ergo sum. I think, therefore I am. I exist. And I thought, that's fantastic. And he extrapolates the reason. I love Descartes. I like, look, I'm not the first one to say that, but but I'm fascinated by the idea of the revelation versus reason. And I think what I see in a lot of spirituality for myself, and I think with you, correct me if I'm wrong, is that looking for reason doesn't necessarily make you an atheist.
No.
It just makes you look for, it doesn't make you even lack faith. You're just like, I'm interested.
Exactly. This goes back to calcified, which is unchanging. This is what I believe.
Right.
This is what I was told as a child.
Right.
And if I think differently, I'm wrong. God gave us free will, gave us a brain, you know. Mm-hmm. We have creative energy. I believe we co-create our life with God, with the ultimate creator. I think we're in a constant creative symbiotic relationship with the ultimate creator. And we can create, but because we have free will, we can create, we can split the atom, right?
Right.
And bring electricity to millions of people, or we can split the atom and blow up a town.
All right. You can take a knife and make a salad or kill someone.
We have that free will. We're not amoebas just responding to stimulus.
All right. This is good in a personal sense, but look, let's look at the problem of evil.
Mm-hmm.
Like when the innocents are whatever that is.
Right.
Well, you know, when something awful happens to a child or someone
right.
who doesn't deserve it, you know.
Right.
How do you, because this is a stumbling block for me every single time.
It's a stumbling block for everyone.
I can't believe that the universe is benign when this can happen.
Yeah, but maybe the universe isn't benign. You know, does God just create us and let us bounce into each other and see what we do, like a game show? You know, are they going to destroy or create or whatever? But it depends on your belief. If you believe in reincarnation, which I'm not saying I do, but I am exploring that. If you believe in reincarnation, to fully understand the mind of God, I have to experience what it is to be the victim as well as the perpetrator.
Right.
I have to understand every aspect of human life. And I can't do that unless I triumph and suffer, starve and excel. And through many lifetimes, then I become like the mind of God. Now, I'm not saying I believe that, but that's one answer to why evil exists. And I can't even begin to answer that question. And that's why they go, I don't believe in God because he allows innocent people to die. But I go, God's not swooping down with a sword and killing these innocent people. man is, humankind is. Mm. So what is motivating? And then that gets back to dualistic thinking, which is, oh, it's the devil, and which used to drive me crazy. Anything bad, the devil did it. Well, yeah, then you abdicate all responsibility for your life.
Yeah, no, other guys came and did it and then ran away. It wasn't me.
Yeah.
I know. Hey, listen, it's a subject which is not small.
No.
It's a pretty big subject. But I tell you one thing, it has proved my theory that comedians and comedic minds are the modern school of philosophy.
Oh.
And 1,000 years from now, they will discuss people like us the way they discuss Aristotle, Plato, and, you know, like Carrot Top will be, you know, Archimedes. It's lovely to talk to you. I could talk to you all day. Let's do it again.
All right. Thank
all right.
you, Craig.
Good luck with the book.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
Bye.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth, no matter who you are, that mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at betterhelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of 2 clinically studied ingredients in 1 revolutionary formula. Berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. And right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.